And welcome to Writers on Writing once again. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and we're on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine and at KUCI.org. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine. Writers on Writing features authors, editors, poets, and literary agents discussing the art and business of writing. And today, my guest is R.A. Salvatore. With over 4 million books sold in the U.S. alone and 24 books to his credit, a number of them bestsellers, Salvatore has become one of the most important figures in modern epic fantasy. A lifelong resident of Massachusetts, R.A. Salvatore penned his first manuscript in 1982 in a spiral notebook, writing by candlelight while listening to Fleetwood Mac's Tusk album. His first break came in 1987 when TSR, publisher of Dungeons and Dragons, offered him a contract based on a proposal for the Forgotten Realms shared world setting. Bob's first published novel, The Crystal Shard, was released in February of 88 and climbed to number 2 on the Walden Books bestseller list. By 1990, his third book, The Halfling's Gem, had made the New York Times bestseller list. With a contract for 3 more TSR books and with his first novel and its sequel, Sold to Penguin, Bob remembers that it seemed like a good time to quit my day job. Before becoming a full-time writer in 1990, Bob worked as a financial specialist. He lives with his wife, Diane, and their 3 children, the oldest of whom is a teenager and whom Salvatore calls my first and best copy editor. When not writing, Bob enjoys gaming and outdoor activities such as hockey, softball, and skiing. R.A. Salvatore's last novel, Ascendance, was set in the world of Corona, which is the world where the Demon Wars saga and Mortalis are set. Salvatore's latest project is the novelization of George Lucas's film Star Wars, Episode II, Attack of the Clones, as well as a new entry in the second Demon Wars trilogy, Transcendence. Welcome.
Well, hello there.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. Let me update one thing.
Sure.
All 3 of my kids are teenagers now.
They're all teenagers now. That's is that shocking? I have a 7-year-old, so.
Yes, that's shocking.
You know, how did you get, I know, you know, sort of what I've learned in terms of how you routed to writing, but how exactly did you get involved with fantasy?
Well, I was actually not much of a reader or a writer by the time I finished high school. I was when I was very young. I used to read all the Peanuts books, loved Charlie Brown, and I wrote all my own Snoopy books. But by the time I got out of high school, I really hadn't gotten anything to read that interested me in school. And this is one of my pet peeves. One of the things I've been fighting against since I've been a published author is trying to explain to teachers that you have to give kids books to read that they will want to read.
Yes.
But that didn't happen to me. I actually started college as a math computer science major.
Now that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, what happened was my freshman year, 1977, my sister gave me a copy of The Lord of the Rings. And, of course, at that time, that was really the only fantasy book out there that you could find in any stores. And I took that book a couple of months later. We had a huge blizzard up here in New England. We were locked in for the entire week, no school, no roads. And instead of being housebound, I went to Middle Earth, and I just fell in love with it. And to me, it was like the first question I remember I was asking myself, like it was yesterday when I was reading The Hobbit, why didn't anybody give me this book to read in junior high?
Mm-hmm. So you spend a lot of time speaking to high schools and library groups and encouraging people, especially kids, to read.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is it because of what you went through?
Absolutely. I look back on some of the books they gave me now, and I can say that these are good books, and I understand why they're classics now. But when I was in the 8th grade, Ethan Frome was not a great book.
Right.
And neither was Silas Marner, and neither was Moby Dick.
They weren't the kind of books that are going to inspire kids, young kids, to read.
Not at all. Not at all. And, you know, I think the job of teachers today, and librarians for that matter, is so much more difficult than it was when I was a kid because, you know, you've got computer games, you've got the internet, you've got 75 channels on the television, and kids are involved in so many structured sports that the fight for the time for kids is much more competitive now than it
mm-hmm.
used to be
mm-hmm.
for the kids' time. But the beauty of reading is reading's really downtime.
Yes.
And if you can give a kid a book that he or she likes to read, and they actually get into that world that the author's creating, and I mean, it can be the world Tom Clancy's creating in one of his wonderful military novels, or a Robert Ludlum thriller, or, you know, a fantasy book, or whatever it is. But if the kid can fall away, the teenager can fall away from all the stress of high school and sports and all the rest of it and get into that book, that's downtime. And I firmly believe that as soon as you give a kid or a young adult a book that he or she wants to read, your job's done as far as teaching them to read.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because some young kids, like my son, who's going on 8, he has been into Captain Underpants for a while. And I've heard parents say, oh, Captain Underpants. And I think, you know what? It's harmless. And he wants to read it. He wants to read. Who
cares? Well, I had this argument with someone about the R.L. Stine Goosebumps books. And someone said, oh, they're reading Goosebumps and rolling their eyes. And I'm like, they're reading.
Right.
Don't you understand? They're reading. and you don't pick up, you know, Macbeth for your first work to read. You don't pick up James Joyce if you're not an accomplished reader. Mm-hmm. And reading, like any other skill, takes practice.
Yeah. Well, actually, your book was sent to me by your publisher, and it was on my shelf, and Travis was near my bookshelf and computer, and he saw it, and he grabbed it. Like, I got to read this.
Just The Attack of the Clones?
Yeah, The Attack of the Clones. So he coveted it quite a while, and I just took it out of his backpack to have it for the last few days. But, you know, it's just so interesting, and I'm curious how one does a novelization of a film.
Well, it's pretty plum assignment, I think.
Yeah, I think so,
that,
too.
You get to go work with George Lucas.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, the way this one worked was, I had done when Del Rey got the license to do adult fiction Star Wars books. They won the license from Bantam a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was like in 1998. They got into a little bit of a problem. I don't know if they had a problem with another author or what. I don't know the whole story. I don't even want to know it. But I know that I got a phone call in August of 1998, and they wanted me to come in and do the first book in the New Jedi Order series, a book called Vector Prime. And New Jedi Order takes place like 20-something years after Return of the Jedi. So it's way in the future, and Han and Leia are married, and they have 3 teenagers, which is, I knew how to write them. And Luke is now married to another character that was created in the Bantam novels for Star Wars. So anyway, they asked me to come in and do it. I did the book, you know, and they were quite pleased with it. Lucasfilm was pleased with it. And then right after the book came out in 1999, they asked if they could put me on the list of authors. Del Rey asked they could put me on the list of authors they were going to send to Lucasfilm to be selected for episode 2. So that list goes up there, and the editors at Lucasfilm narrow it down, and then they pass it on to George Lucas, and he picked me. So I remember it was Election Day 2000. I flew out to California, went up to the ranch, and they handed me the script for Attack of the Clones, the original shooting script. I read through it, and I went to the ranch the next day and saw a slideshow that went along with the script, you know, artist renditions of what the ships might look like or Padme's outfits or some of the aliens. And then I got to sit down with George Lucas for a few hours and really pick his brain, find out who was important to him in the book. You know, who should I focus on? And then, of course, I went from there home and wrote the first draft, but, of course, it was just a first draft because now he's shooting the movie, and he's making changes all along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So while he's doing that, I'm getting emails and FedEx packages with all the new shooting pages so I can tweak the book to keep it consistent with the movie.
So you were writing the book along with the screenwriter writing the screenplay?
Well, the screenplay was done, but as they write it, it's almost an editing process. I mean, as they shoot it, it's almost an editing process of the screenplay, where they find new scenes that they think will work better and old scenes they didn't like the way they work, so they drop them. So they're going through their edit, and I'm going through my edit in reaction to their edits.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's a lot more in the book than's in the movie.
Sure.
Because that was the whole point of doing the book.
Right.
You can get into some of the backstory, particularly on the minor characters, a little bit more.
Sometimes with novelizations, they seem awfully slim, and you just wonder how did that author get it all in the book, but this one is quite nice and hefty. Like you said, there's that backstory. There's,
well,
you know,
these are done very differently than a lot of the other novelizations. The beauty of this one is that George Lucas was involved. A lot of times, what happens is you get the. I did another novelization a few years ago, and it was quite slim. But you get the original script, and that's it. Then you get very little direction. You get very little interaction. When I got to sit down with George Lucas, we talked about, you know, what areas should I explore in the book that you didn't have time to explore in the movie?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you wish, I asked him, what do you wish was in the movie that, you know, if you had more time, what would you put in? So I was able to go back and add a lot. And, of course, he was the last editor on the book, so we made sure we weren't crossing any lines that were going to mix him up for episode 3.
Uh-huh. What fun.
But with him, yeah, with George Lucas involved directly, it allowed me to take some chances and go beyond the movie.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You are listening to Writers on Writing. My guest is R.A. Salvatore, author of Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, and Second Demon Wars Trilogy, Transcendence. Are you able to write different things concurrently? Could you work on this and work on another project at the same time, or was this all encompassing?
Well, with Star Wars, I had no choice because I couldn't give the entire year to it. I had to write Transcendence
mm-hmm.
as well. But typically, I write one book at a time. And I wrote, when I sat down and wrote the first draft of the novelization, I just did that.
Mm-hmm.
That was my entire schedule, was just writing that first draft. Then I got to work on Transcendence. Whenever Lucasfilm would call, I'd have to, you know, put Transcendence aside and go back to Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
But I write one book at a time. I get very confused with, you know, who's dead, who's still alive, which characters are in which world, and so one at a time.
Yeah. Now,
right now I'm working on the last book in the Demon Wars, the seventh book,
mm-hmm.
and very satisfied with the way this series is wrapping up.
I'm wondering about just the fantasy genre and how it's the same or how it differs from, say, other genres like literary writing or the mystery genre. I mean, sometimes it seems that the readers of fantasy are so much more involved in the books in a way. I mean, they're, you know, it seems that author websites, it seems there are more fan clubs. It seems that there's just more author involvement. Is that true, or is it just my outsider perception?
I think the romance genre, they're pretty involved
true.
As well. They have huge conventions, and, you know, the authors have huge fan sites and followings as well. But the fantasy genre, you know, we're talking escapist fiction here. We're talking about a place for people to get away. And if they like going to that place, they get away quite often.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an entire other industry out there that supports it. You know, you have the online gaming with games like EverQuest and Ultima Online and Dark Age of Camelot, these huge online multiplayer fantasy worlds. I think EverQuest has 500,000 people playing it.
Mm.
And then you have the Dungeons and Dragons game. One of the companies I work for does that. And there are a whole slew of other products that support this. You have Renaissance fairs. And,
sure.
And it's just a wonderful way to kind of forget the fact that you just lost $10,000 in the stock market today or that, you know, they're fighting a war in Afghanistan. And,
right.
And funny thing is that the fantasy genre, being a writer in fantasy is a very recession-proof job because whenever the times get tough, you know, whenever economically times get tougher, whenever there's a war, the fantasy genre spikes.
You're kidding me.
I'm not at all.
That is interesting.
The only difference was, like, with the Gulf War, when we had 500,000 troops stationed over there, we actually took a big hit because they're a big part of our audience.
Mm-hmm.
The military is a huge part of my audience. But no, it's the truth. When times get tough, fantasy books sell more.
Mm-hmm.
I think books do in general, but fantasy books really go out the window. So, I mean, look at it. Look at the downturn we've had over the last couple of years, and just coincidentally, but I don't think it's coincidentally, look at the movies that have been coming out. The Lord of the Rings is being made now.
Right.
You know, Harry Potter is through the roof, and, you know, we have Star Wars again. We have Spider-Man, the Hulk's being made.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good old escapist fiction, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. I want to talk to you for a few minutes, since that seems to be what we have left, about writing, about the process of writing, and especially since you talk a lot to kids and inspiring kids to read. I wonder about inspiring children to write and what you might tell kids that have trouble getting started, or anybody, really. I mean, what do you do when you're starting or maybe when you're hitting sort of a rough spot and you're not sure what to do, where to go? You know you need to produce some pages. You want to produce some pages, but it's just sort of rough going.
Sure. You know, the old writer's block question. What do you do when you get writer's block? Well, and I tell them flat out I don't believe in it. And I really don't. I think it's just a lack of confidence. Sit down and just start typing. Put something down on the paper. You can always throw it away tomorrow if you don't like it.
Right.
But as far as what I really talk to kids about more than writing, well, when I'm talking about writing, is don't be afraid. You know, when you are a writer, you're exposing yourself. There's no two ways about it. I mean, it is very difficult to get criticism of your writing, whether you're a second grader or a professional author. You know, we all have our dartboards with critics' faces on them and throw those darts quite hard at the boards, let me assure you. But that's what you have to go through. It's part of the business. But for kids, a lot of times what happens is they'll write this paper for a classroom, typically, and they love it. And they think it's the most brilliant thing ever written because they get it. They get everything they were saying, even if they didn't say it correctly for anyone else to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes back to them with red marks all over it. So a lot of times when I'm talking to classrooms, I'm more lecturing the teacher than the students about encouraging kids to just sit down and write. And the other thing I really want to stress to kids is you need to learn the mechanics of the language. You know, what you have to think of language as, and this is including, you know, punctuation marks and where to put capital letters, you have to learn that the language is not just a set of rules, it's a set of tools for you to find your voice and communicate the way you want to tell the story.
Yes.
And I try to free them up from their concerns about, do I put a comma here? Because if you can just teach them to find their voice, they'll put the commas and the semicolons, they'll put them in the right places for their voice, for what they are trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
But more than anything else, I think the best way you teach writing is to get kids reading.
Mm.
Reading is how you learn how to write.
Right.
And what I'm trying to tell teachers and students alike is that, you know, just find that one book that connects with you and you'll understand.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Are you surprised by the success of your books?
Oh, I'm stunned. I'm stunned. I had no idea how this... I remember I was sitting there writing that first book back in 1982, and I didn't get published until 1988 was my first release. But I always said, you know, I didn't write the first book to get published. I just wrote it so I'd have something that would distinguish me from everybody else working in the factory with me.
Yeah.
Just something so that my kids could hold it up to my grandkids and say, look what your grandfather did.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I got it done and people were saying, hey, this is pretty good, you should try to get this published, I kept thinking, if I could only just publish one book, I'd be happy. And then when I published these books and this Dark Elf character took off, and he's really the one that pushed the career way ahead, and I look back on it now and I'm just stunned. I have no idea how this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had told me in 1977, when I was 18 years old, sitting in the theater watching Star Wars, that I was going to write the book for the fifth one of those movies, I would have laughed in your face.
Yeah,
I had no idea this was going to happen to me.
And through it all,
I'm trying to do is the same thing. I'm trying to give people that buy my books. I really hope they'll buy the book, try it, and feel like they got their money's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking just about entertainment value.
Yeah.
And I just try to have fun with it.
Who do you read?
Boy, I don't read nearly as much as I used to. That's one of the trappings of the business. When you're as busy as I am writing, it's hard to read.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the middle of a Clancy book, and I just love Tom Clancy. I think he's wonderful. Of course, I like military history, and Michael Schara was one of my favorites. And now his son Jeff is doing some brilliant work, I think, with Gods and Generals and some of the other books that he's doing. But The Killer Angels is one of my favorite books.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Crichton, I like a lot. John Grisham, I like a lot. I spread it out. I just saw The Bourne Identity the other day, and I really liked the movie. But a friend of mine really didn't like the movie because he said the book was so much better. Well, if the book was better than that movie, I really have to go try Robert Ludlum. And so that's my next one. It's going to be The Bourne Identity.
Now, when you read, are you reading as a writer studying, or are you reading to be entertained?
Well, I'm reading to be entertained more than anything else. But if I am entertained, then I'm a writer studying.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you learn. And there are sometimes I read as a writer studying. When I did the Demon Wars series, when I sat down to create this world of Corona, I think it was about 6 years ago now, and right before I wrote the first book, I knew what I wanted. I wanted a world that one of the distinguishing factors of this fantasy world were these monasteries that kind of dominated the land. And so I read Umberto Eco. and the name of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a study. And I loved it. But a lot of times when I read, I'm just trying, I want the book to do to me what I try to do for other people, and that's just get me away from the day.
Yeah.
And it's very hard. I mean, especially if I'm reading fantasy, because I'm reading it like an editor, and that takes all the fun out of it. And I've noticed like with the online community, the people who are out there bashing all the books are fan fiction writers. Okay, they're wannabe authors. And what they're doing is they're just reading books like editors would read books. They're taking all their own fun away.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that too. You can't help it, especially if I'm reading fantasy, but I try very hard not to.
Interesting.
Especially if I'm reading Terry Brooks, because he's my best friend, and if I read one of his books and get very critical about it, he won't invite me out to Seattle for Copper River King salmon anymore. I can't have that. I have to get my Copper River King salmon.
You've been listening to Writers on Writing, and my guest has been R.A. Salvatore, author of Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, and a new entry in the second Demon Wars trilogy, Transcendence. We have him for another minute or so. I wanted to ask you if your beginnings are your beginnings, or do you come back after the book is written and rewrite the beginning?
What I typically do is, I'm going through the books. Let's say I have 25 chapters in the book, just to use that number. When I get to about chapter 21, I'll go back and start rewriting. And so what I'll do is every day I'll rewrite one chapter. I'll just do a very polishing edit on it. Hopefully I can get through a chapter in a day. And then later on in the day I'll continue with my new writing to finish the book.
Mm-hmm.
And for me that works, because what I find is that if I time it correctly, and I'm pretty good at that now after all these books, I've done over 30, I'm pretty much caught up with the polishing as I'm finishing the book. And that kind of ties everything together a little bit more tightly for me. It's just a technique that's worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't have... There's a couple of things people don't understand about the publishing industry today, especially in genre fiction. And the first is that you just don't have the luxury of time. You know, I got a phone call from TSR, the people that do the Dungeons & Dragons game, back, I mean, it must have been 1992, maybe 93, I don't know, way back when. And they called me up with this big news that Walden Books was insisting that they give them a hardcover book, and they wanted me to be the one to write it about this Dark Elf character. And so TSR was thrilled. This was going to be their first hardcover novel, and they wanted me to write it. You know, what an honor. And they said, we need it in 6 weeks. So I had 6 weeks to write a 110,000-word novel. And when I did Vector Prime for Del Rey, they called me in August of 1998. They needed the first draft in November of 1998.
Interesting. So there's such a turnaround time here.
Well, you don't have... The publisher has to be so quick to market now. You know, you don't have the luxury. Some writers do. Some writers have forced that into their schedule. My schedule has always been a little more crazy than that, mostly because I started out in Shared World. Especially in Shared World, like Forgotten Realms, we have all kinds of different products coming up. If they have a product coming out that goes along with a book I'm writing, they want the book out there. I don't have extra time to write it. They want to go right through it and get it done. So you have to be clean the first time through. And the other thing that's happened in the industry that's a kind of a dirty little secret of publishing today is, you know, I talked to some of the older authors, and they recall fondly when the editor used to get on a plane and fly out and spend 2 weeks with them, beating them up about the book. I would love that.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, I would love that so much. I'm hiring an editor to do it with a book I'm going to write. I've hired one of the top guns in New York. Privately, before I even go to sell the book, he's coming out to my house and he's going to beat me up for 2 weeks because you need an editor.
Right.
You need someone to do that, but the editors are so overworked in New York right now and in everywhere else in the publishing industry. I mean, you know, this is the first book of four I have to edit this week. It's a crazy business right now. You better be good and you better be clean on that first pass through, because you don't get the luxury of time and rewriting and strong editorial input that's going to, like, change the whole book in a lot of instances.
One last question. Do you think it's a hard genre to break into?
Fantasy?
Yeah.
It's probably one of the easier genres to break into, because there are so many outlets now. I would say fantasy, romance are two of the easier ones, because there are so many books being published in the two fields. And... You know, there are still in fantasy magazines that will take some short fiction from new writers, and they're still like Wizards of the Coast, the old TSR that I still work for. They do anthologies every year, and they'll always try a new author now and then. You know, they're always willing to grab someone out of the submission slush pile and give them a shot in a short story if they like what they see.
Interesting.
So I don't think it's nearly as difficult as some of the other, well, especially, you know, the straight literary is probably the most difficult because you've got the, you know, it would be very hard, I would think, for a first-time author to write a book to standard to break into that crowd.
Right.
But there are so many books being produced, you know, novelizations of computer games, for example. Novelizations of movies, that I don't think fantasy is as difficult as some of the other genres anymore.
Interesting.
Of course, the competition is fierce. I mean, I can't even tell you how many manuscripts show up at the editor's office each week. I know that TSR, well, Wizards of the Coast, just put out a call for a new shared world, and they're doing a contest. They want people to submit their ideas for a shared world that they can set their games in and their books in. And, you know, they thought they were going to get 1,000 entries. They got 15,000 entries in, like, 3 weeks. So, you know, now they should have just done it in-house. They're going to have more work just sifting through those 15,000 to find out which ones are any good. But it's a everybody's got a keyboard. Everybody's got a spell checker. And everybody wants to write a book. I mean, have you ever met someone who hasn't said to you, eventually, I'm going to write a book someday?
Right, or they want you to write it. I have an idea for you.
Oh, I get that all the time. I get that all the time. I get emails all the time. I have this great idea for a book. I'll let you write it.
And you're like, thank you. No, thank you.
Wait, you got to be careful. You don't want to read that idea because you may write it, you know, subconsciously in the future and get sued.
I know you have to go, and I wanted to just ask you if you have any last words or any advice for the writers listening.
Well, I tell everyone who comes up to me and is serious about wanting to be a writer, I tell them all the same thing. It's kind of my shtick. I've been saying it for 10 years, and I mean it more now than ever. If you want to be a writer, the first thing is, if you can quit, quit. And I mean that in all sincerity, because if you're going into this business for fame and fortune, if you're going into this business to think you're going to, you know, to think there's a shortcut here, then you're in the wrong business. It's not what writing is about. Writing is about abuse. If you're an author, you know, think about it. From day one, you're going to be getting rejection letters. You're going to have editors telling you this is no good. Nobody tells you what they like. They all tell you what they don't like.
Right.
And so if you can quit, quit. If you can't quit, what that tells me is you've got these stories inside of you that are clawing at the inside of your skin to get out. And you're not going to be happy unless you write. So you might as well try to sell what you write. But it should never be the focus of your writing. Mm-hmm. Becoming published should never be the emotional focus of your writing. There comes a point where it has to be the professional focus. You're trying to sell a book. But it should never become the emotional focus of your writing. When you send a book out to a publisher, immediately sit down and start writing something else. Because it could be months, it could be a year before you even get rejected, let alone accepted.
Right.
And you can't dwell on that part of the business. This business is about rejection. Even when you're a published author, even when you're, you know, published authors, they always try to sound aloof and they always try to sound like, well, anyone that doesn't get it just doesn't get it. And ha 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 to them. But the truth is that all published authors, you know, they always kind of look at those Amazon reviews every now and then. And it hits you right in the gut when somebody trashes your work. And there's nothing you can do about it because it's there on the page. And you can't say, I wish I had done this, because you didn't. You did what you did, and that's the way it is. And that's the kind of life that you only survive if the writing is what's important to you, the actual sitting down and telling those stories. That's what's got to be important to you.
I appreciate your time.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Would love to have you back sometime.
Well, I'm always here.
Okay.
I'm always here.
Well, we'll have to talk to your publicist and get you back on.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
I'll have her keep in touch.
All righty.
All righty.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye. That was R.A. Salvatore, author of Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones, the novelization, and The new entry in the second Demon Wars trilogy, Transcendence.